Okay, now can you hear me? Okay. I said, thank you for coming to the 55th birthday party. I hope you're having a great time. So I'm thrilled today to be introducing the luncheon speaker. What I want to do first is tell you that there's a cabaret tonight, and though there's no additional room to purchase tickets for the dinner, there are many tickets available for the cabaret, and they're only $10 each, so please come. And you can buy the tickets at the cabaret and, I believe, at the registration area. What time does the cabaret start? After the dinner speaker is what I'm told. Just because we've been looking all over, if anybody has seen any questionnaires for evaluation, you know, Pam printed them up, and we had a whole box of them. If anyone has seen them, please let me know. That would be great. Absolutely. Anything else? Okay, so without any further ado, I'd love to introduce our luncheon speaker. This is somebody who has chaired 4 birthday parties. Wow. Yeah, and he has 28 years of abstinence, and I think that he has participated in volunteering on 18 birthday parties. So let's give Tony P. a big hand.
Okay, I'm going to have to hold this, so that's really going to be fun. Okay, so hello, everybody. My name is Tony P., and I'm a compulsive overeater. So my sponsor today told me, he said, I hope you're going to be funny, because the luncheon speaker is supposed to be funny. So, you know, I'll do the best I can. But I only have one story to tell, and in 28 years, there's been a lot of recovery in my life, and I've been absent since the day I came in, which I've been really lucky. I've been lucky because I know that there's been a lot of people who have relapse. I will try to hold this as best I can. I'll do the best I can. Sorry. I just keep reminding me. So, okay. How's that? Better? Yeah. All right. Okay. Hug the microphone. All right, so when I came in, actually how I came in was I was born. How's that? How am I doing so far? Good sponsor? All right. All right, so I was born. But when I was born, I was born early. I was born at 7 months. I was born to a parent who was drinking. Her water broke early. I was almost born on a bar stool, unfortunately. And she was just, kind of flabbergasted that I was born that early. So I was born early. The doctor told her that I probably would not make it because I was born 2 pounds, 3 ounces. In the early 60s, mid 60s, probably was, you were not supposed to survive. I was 2 pounds, 3 ounces. He said if he makes it through the night, he may have a 50-50 chance of living. So good luck. She said, okay. I want him to have a really good name on his tombstone. So she gave me this really long, precocious name. It was really beautiful. I did make it through the night. And for the first 7 years of my life, I was very sickly, and I couldn't gain weight to save my life. And I thought, when she told me this story, I thought, I was home free. What happened, she and my father, she was an alcoholic, and my father was an alcoholic, and they did the best they could. And then at 7, a couple of things happened. She decided to get sober and divorce my father, and I discovered peanut butter and chocolate. I talk a lot about food. Sorry, this is Overeaters Anonymous. If that offends you, I don't know, maybe you're in the wrong place, but I do talk a lot about food. I name specific foods. Some people, that does offend them, and I don't know what to tell you. But I'm not endorsing those foods. Don't go out and eat them, whatever. I don't know what to tell you. Anyway, so I put chocolate and peanut butter on every single thing I could find once I discovered those two foods. And I loved them. And, you know, it says in the doctor's opinion, and I believe this, once I found those two foods, I ate them because I liked the effect it produced in me. It gave me this absolute euphoria. It gave me this release and calmness that I just couldn't find anywhere else. Why did I eat these two foods? You know, was it because my mother didn't love me? Absolutely not. My mother loved me unconditionally. She loved me to the ends of the earth. Was it because my father didn't love me? No. Now, I will tell you, my mother did marry another man who I didn't really particularly like that much. He didn't particularly like me either. He married my mother, and I came with the deal. I was kind of like the package deal. he wanted me to be a jock. you can look at me and tell that probably didn't work out that well. He also wanted me to be a car mechanic. You can also tell that didn't work out either. I have AAA. I'm not endorsing AAA either. Want to make sure I do not break the traditions. You know, my father probably was someone who probably should not have been a parent. He just didn't know how to do it. He had another child from a previous marriage, and he just did the best he could. He was an alcoholic. He continued to drink. My mother did get sober, as I said. They became very well known in the other program. They started speaking and doing service, and I got left with babysitters and things like that. And that's when my eating career really took off. I was really lonely. I was kind of like an only child. I had an older sister. She was 11 years older than I was. And we just didn't really get along because she was 11 years older. We just didn't really grow up together. I wanted her as an older sister, but it just didn't work out. Probably in my early, really very, very early, probably even earlier than 7, I knew that I was not like other little boys. What the hell? I knew that I was gay. Yeah, I know. All right. Let's not make a big deal about that. Okay, so you've all known it. I just don't talk about it that much. So anyway, and I think my mother knew it too, and she was just kind of like, okay, let's just wait this one out. My stepfather was like, oh, my God, because he was the ultimate, you know, macho man. And so that's why I think he wanted me to, you know, do cars and play football. So he would take me to the playground and, like, want to throw footballs. Now, for a, you know, boy who's trying to come to grips with this, not knowing what that really sexuality means and all this, this was horrifying, absolutely horrifying. Because, you know, if you... you know what football means, you know, I mean, for those of you who like football, but for those of you who don't, I mean, a ball hurtling at you at 5,000 miles an hour. I mean, I had this horrifying thought that it could hit me and it would hurt. So it would just come towards me and I would just move out of the way. And he would say, well, the point is you're supposed to catch it. And I would say, well, I don't really understand that, the whole thing. So we just didn't get along. And you know, it was a hard childhood. And so I think a lot of that has to do with why I ate. I just couldn't come to grips with all of that, as well. Growing up was really hard. I would go to meetings with my mother and my stepfather, and she was very well known in that program, and it was kind of like being a movie star's son, you know, because she was so well known that it was like being just basking in her glory. I mean, I was just like, everyone knew her and everyone loved her, and it was just so, it was like she was a movie star. It was so great. But then there was this other part where I would just be at home by myself, and what could I do but eat? And I learned how to sneak eat and lie and cheat and steal, and I was very, very good at it. And I didn't want to risk her displeasure or her disapproval, so I wanted to always be her good little boy. And so that's why I lied, and that's why I cheated, and that's why I stole. And that's why I wanted to always make sure that she still loved me. And that's why I wanted to make sure that everybody still loved me, and that all the teachers still loved me, and all the people around me still loved me. So I always lied, and I always stole, and I always made sure that you thought that I was still the same person, you know, so that you would always still think that I was still the most wonderful person in the world. So fast forwarding, then I got into dieting, in grade school, and then I got into junior high, and in junior high you have to dress for gym. Oh boy. And my parents would then, bribe me and say, well, if you lose your weight, we'll buy you new school clothes. Well, of course, you know, being the fashionista in training, I was like, okay, that will do it. You know, I'll lose the weight, but, cause I didn't want to be in the husky section, cause you know, for guys, the husky section, that's really scary. And, cause the pockets of your pants are way down to your ankles. And so, you know, I would try to lose the weight, and I would be successful in losing the weight. And then as soon as they would tell you you didn't have to dress for gym, then I would gain it all right back, you know, and then some, because I didn't want any of the other boys to see my lily white fat body, you know, that was my horror. But as soon as I didn't have to do it, then I would just gain it all back again. And it was successful. And then my mom and I started dieting together, and we would do the two powdered shakes a day and the one meal. Yeah, those, oh yeah. Except that, you know, because I'm a liar and a cheat and a thief, I started borrowing meals from other days. The problem is I'm really bad at math. And I can't keep track of the math and the days, and I got all screwed up and everything, and I couldn't figure out what day I had borrowed from, and then it was a game over. So, you know, it just got messed up. So that didn't work out very well. And then I had to stop doing that, you know. And also you have to take vitamins, and I just don't like doing all that. So it just stopped working. So fast forward, I got to high school. And in high school, I finally had to tell my mother that, about who I was. And she was like, oh, thank God. Well, I've known this for years. And I said, well, how the conversation was is, well, I have something to tell you. And after 3 hours, she said, listen, are you trying to tell me that you're gay? And I said, yes, no, how would you feel? So that's how that went. So she's like, okay, great. So we went to San Francisco one weekend. She flirted, I flirted, and she did better than I did. So I don't really know how that worked out. But anyway, so, you know, I mean, that was fine. She then realized that, she told me that she loved me no matter what, and that was great, you know, and she just said that it was okay. You know, in all those years that I worried that I wasn't going to be her, you know, favorite little boy, was over. I didn't have to worry about that anymore. It was great. My stepfather, on the other hand, had a much harder time with it. My dad, I never did tell him. So that was just the way that was. But so I got to high school. I got through high school. Now, in high school, that's where my eating career really kind of took on. I got to 200 pounds, and I only could wear two things, brown and blue. Corduroy pants and shirts with T-shirts under it, because I didn't want anyone to see what lie underneath. And for those of you who have ever worn corduroy, when you get to a certain weight and your legs rub together and the corduroys wear out, it's not a pretty picture. But that's all I could wear. I got through the high school years, and I got to community college, And I decided to, in my infinite wisdom, enroll in a dance class, a theater arts dance class of all things. I don't know what I thought, but I just thought, oh, I'm going to do this, you know. Wow. I had this moment of, I don't know, ego, I guess. And I enrolled in this class, and everyone was, you know, and there was mirrors all down the room. Mirrors. I'm 200 pounds, mirrors. And everyone's, you know, warming up. And I, you know, my thing was all through life was that if, as long as people laughed and I could make them laugh, that they would love me. Right? Then they wouldn't see that I was fat. So I was going to run down this room. I was going to jump up in the air. I was going to twirl. Twirl. 200 pounds, remember. Come down with a graceful landing. 200 pounds, twirl, graceful landing. Pirouette. And they would all applaud and love me. I did this. 200 pounds does not run, does not twirl, certainly does not leap high in the air, and does not come down with a graceful landing on a wood floor. It comes down with a thud, it comes down with a, you know, and it does not land all at the same time. Talk about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. That's what I felt. When I saw myself in the mirror and I saw that they were all laughing and they were laughing at me, and this is what finally hit home for me, the shame that I felt at that moment, I can still feel it to this day. It shocked me, and I was so disgusted with myself when I saw myself in that mirror and I saw all of their faces. I just went, so this is what everyone was doing all through my life. They were laughing at me. They weren't laughing with me. I couldn't believe it, you know. And I, at that moment, I went, I have to stop doing this. I have to go on the diet of all diets. That was my answer. The diet of all diets. That was it. And so I did. Now, at that moment, I will tell you that I was eating. So here was my... Here's the brownie story, the brownie mix story. So at that moment, I was eating 3-quarter-pound bags of M&Ms a day, 2 liters of Pepsi, and a box of dry brownie mix a day. Now, the box of dry brownie mix, here's the story about that. So how that happens is, for those of you that are chocoholics, you can certainly understand this. I used to love that, you know, powder and chocolate milk, you know, kind of substance. So when I got this idea, like, you know, in the end of the chocolate milk and sometimes the powder just stays at the bottom of the glass and then all of a sudden it's still there and you're shaking your head. I love that. And you just like, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I want to scoop it up, you know? And I was like, oh, this is the best. And so I was like, I want more of that powder. And so then I'm like, well, but I don't want to just eat, you know, that's just a little box of it. So I thought, what's the same? And I'm like, brownie mix. I could buy brownie mix and eat the brownie mix. And so that's what I did. And so I would buy it and just with a spoon and eat it out of the box. No water. No water. That's for pansies. Because you could chew it. You can chew this brownie mix. You just have to learn how to breathe. Because you know what? One false move, you will choke and it's brown smoke everywhere. Telling you. Dangerous. It's not for wimps. You got to be able to do this. Takes a lot of practice. But I can do it. I can tell you. So that's what I was doing on a daily basis. And I'm telling you, those are the lengths that I would go to have my fix every day. That's what I would do. And I am serious. That's what I would do. I had to have it every single day to take that edge off because that's what made me feel good. just like it says in the doctor's opinion. That's what made me feel good. It took the edge off. It made me feel like I could do whatever I wanted, and I felt good. You know, that's complete honesty. So I went on this diet. Stopped eating chocolate, stopped eating Pepsi, cold turkey. People told me I was a raving lunatic. I was hateful. I didn't care because I just needed to stop. But they said, ooh. I mean, when you get off that much sugar all at once, oh, yeah, I'm telling you, I probably was a raving lunatic. Whew. And then, I don't know, like, I lost, you know, like 75 pounds. I don't even know. But 3 years later, I had lost 75 pounds. And so did I go to Overeaters Anonymous? No. No, 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 no. So then about 3 years later, someone said, God, you look fantastic. I said, thank you so much. They said, what did you do? I said, oh, I stopped doing all these things. And they said, well, you know, that's great. And I said, yeah. They said, you know, you look really good. And I said, yeah, I do. I really do look great. And you know what? I deserve to celebrate. But, you know, I knew I couldn't do it with chocolate and Pepsi. So what did I do? I went and I bought some vanilla cake mix and 7-Up. But I knew right then I was in deep trouble. So at that moment, I called somebody to speak to his roommate, and it was someone who was actually in the program. And they said, you know, and this is where God kind of intervened in my life. And they said, you know, hi, before I let you speak to my roommate, you know, I know your mom and I'm in OA. I'm like, oh, good Lord. And, you know, I had been to OA. I had been to OA, an OA meeting when I was about, I don't know, like 10 or 11 or something. And, you know, I always say this every time I talk because I think it's so important. We do not know what to do with young people in OA. We just don't know what to do with them, especially that young. You know, we put them in our regular OA meetings, and then we just kind of get really kind of nervous whenever they're in the room. We're like, hi. You know, because we don't know what to say. We don't treat them the same. We, you know, it just gets really... And at that point, it was even worse because, you know, they were all standing around drinking coffee and liquid sweetener. Remember that horrible liquid sweetener you used to have? And it was just really, it was so awkward. It was so awkward. I didn't know what they were talking about. They're, you know, it just was horrible. So I stayed from one meeting and it just didn't work for me. So then when he said he was in OA, I just didn't know what to do. So, he kept trying to, like, say, you know, I'm going to a meeting tonight. And I said, that's great for you. He said, you should come with me. I said, I'm busy for the rest of my life and yours. He kept like pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. And I finally said, fine, I'll meet you there, but I'm taking my own car. And he met me at this Temple Beth Am meeting on La Cienega. I'll never forget it because it was, you know, this meeting. And I'll never forget because, you know, it was my first meeting. It was in the basement of this synagogue and the room was completely orange and it was set up for bingo. And I thought, it was the most bizarre thing I had ever seen in my life. And everyone was strange. And, you know, he introduced me to every single person as a newcomer at my first meeting. And I was horrified because I did not want anyone to know that I was there. And I certainly didn't want to know anyone's name. And I didn't want them to know my name. And I certainly didn't want, you know, all of that. So he would introduce me to them. And I would unintroduce myself to them. So he would say, Tony, this is Terrell. Terrell, this is Tony. He's at his first meeting. And I'd say, hi, Terrell, but I'm just visiting. So I would just, you know, unintroduce myself. So I did not want them to know. So then a woman came up to me and she said, you know, what are you doing here? You're thin. And I thought, huh, wow, fine. You're the smartest person in the room. And I thought, you know, you're right. I was going to leave, but then I decided there was a voice inside my head that said, you have nowhere else to go. And I'm sure that was my higher power telling me to sit down, shut up, and listen. You know, so I did stay. Now, that man became my first sponsor. He decided he was going to sponsor me. Unfortunately, because I'm very self-will run riot, I did not want to listen to him because he wanted me to work the program the way he wanted me to work it. He said, I want you to call me every day. And I said, I have really nothing to say to you every day. I'm very busy. You know, I get up early in the morning. I don't really have a lot. I have a lot of things to do. He said, well, you can call and report the weather. And I said, fine, if that's what you want me to do. Such a smart aleck, little 21-year-old. And I said, I'd get up in the morning and say, good morning, it's 52 degrees, goodbye. And I'd hang up on him. The nerve, he released me with love about 3 weeks later. Then came along sponsor number two. Now, the reason sponsor number two was great for me is because sponsor number two knew every little detail that I was going to do before I knew it myself. Sponsor number two was probably the best sponsor I could have had. Now, sponsor number two was really great. Sponsor number two, but I had an ulterior motive for sponsor number two. See, I came in, and I got absent the very first day. Now, my first abstinence is really kind of basically the same abstinence I have now, except I've added a few things. But I had sugar when I, you know, a lot of sugar, and when I first came in, and so try to go to meetings with compulsory eaters, and you're still eating sugar, like dessert sugar, you know, and you order like a vanilla milkshake with dinner. Try that sometimes. You order it, and then they see it coming. And, you know, they're still talking, but they just kind of watch it as it's coming to the table. They're still talking, but they're watching it. And it comes down. They watch it. You know, it's kind of crazy. It's kind of fun. You should just do it just for grins. Don't eat it. Just watch it and see what happens. Just kidding. Anyway, but so, you know, I got the second sponsor, but the reason I got him was because, and I'm going to be completely honest, you know, I got into the program and I found out that they had this board of directors. And I came in and I thought, after about it, I had been in a month, and I thought, you know, this place is run really badly. Meetings are run poorly. People are not doing things right. This needs some help. And I could fix a lot of this stuff here. So, but when I moved into my apartment, there was a woman that was on the board, and she said, well, you need to have a year. And I went, oh my God, I only have a month. I got 11 months to go. She goes, you need to do steps 4 and 5. And I'm like, oh, wow, I haven't even done step 1, but okay. All right. And I gotta like do all the stuff. So I'm like, okay, well, I need a sponsor to get all that done. So I had a plan, you know, so I had to get this sponsor. I had to get that done. So I needed a sponsor to get 4 and 5 done. So I'm like, okay, so this sponsor could take care of that. And I had this all worked out. So I got this sponsor, and, I started working the steps, you know, as peripherally, as kind of little by little. And we finally got to step 4, and he's like, okay, I want you to write your inventory. I'm like, oh, that. Okay. And so I started taking a lot of time on this, and finally he was like, you know, you got to get this done. And I'm like, okay. And I think I was approaching my year, and I was like, oh yeah, I got to get this done. And he was like, he just kept pushing me, and then finally I said, okay. And I finally said I would meet him to do it, and then I said I was going to meet him, and he lived like, I don't know, in North Hollywood or something like that. And I got lost the first time, and I called him I didn't know where he was. I couldn't find it, and ended up in East LA or Silver. I don't know. I got completely lost the first time. Then finally, next time I did meet him, and I had said I would have been working on this for months. Working on it for months. I couldn't believe, you know, he thought this was like, you know, must have been some War and Peace size novel or something, you know. So I finally did meet him. And he said, okay, great. So, you know, sat down. I think, you know, was going to have this great talk and everything like that. And so he says, okay, ready to go. So I said, okay. He says, well, let's start. And so I said, great. Here it is. Literally, that was it. you have got to be kidding me. He said, you all that time and that's it? I said, that's it. That's all my resentments. I'm only 21 years old. I don't really have that much to, who do I have to resent, really? It's all. So the poor man ironed his entire wardrobe and spent the next 4 hours pulling the rest of my inventory out of me, piece by piece, verbally. So I was a challenge. But then, as soon as that was over, I dumped him because he outlived his usefulness. And I could get on the board. That was all I needed. He was done. I didn't need him. And I spent the next 18 or so years sponsoring myself. That's the truth. That's the truth. Then 18 years later, that same sponsor found me again on the steps of a meeting that I was speaking at and said, "You're not being sponsored, are you?" And I said, "No." He goes, "I'm going to sponsor you again." And he's the same sponsor I have today. And he kicks my butt, let me tell you. But he's great. He's really great. So, you know, that's what happened. That was what it was like, what happened. And, you know, really, you know, in the few minutes that I have left, I kind of wanted to, you know, talk about what my life is like. You know, and that it's really kind of, this is all really leading up to, you know, my life is so incredible. You know, in 28 years, you know, Jen really talked about the service that I've given. And, you know, that's really what's kept me here. You know, when I came in, the very first meeting I went to, I took a service commitment at. The log cabin on Sunday night, I took the microphone commitment. That was my very first meeting, and I took the microphone commitment for the first 6 months of my recovery. And I loved that meeting, and I've had a service commitment for almost every meeting since then. I mean, birthday parties and everything. I just love service. I've been on the board. I was on the board for 19 years. I mean, and I don't want any accolades for that. It's not about that. I mean, I did it because I loved that service, and I loved this program, and I did it because it kept me here. If I can tell anybody anything, it's like, do the service because it'll keep you here. I do the service at meetings because it gets me there in the morning, because, you know, I don't want to get up at, you know, 5:30 in the morning to be at a you know, 8:45 meeting. And someone's like, "Why do you get up that early?" It's like, because I have hair products to do in the morning. That's the only reason I get up that. You know, I have to get up that early. That's the only reason I got to get up that early. I mean, but I have to do that to get my butt at a meeting. I have to do those service commitments, and it gets me there. And, you know, sponsoring people and doing all those wonderful things that I do is because it keeps me connected to the program. You know, taking phone calls and calling people and talking to my sponsor every day and doing the inventories and reading the big book. And you know, I was reading, my sponsor has been doing an inventory, and I was reading in the fourth step something that I just had to read today, and I don't even know if it'll help someone, but it said being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. And I thought, oh yeah, yeah, you know, that's what defeated me all the time. Me. It's always what, it always comes back to me. You know, I'm always the one that gets in my own way. You know, everything, you know, I always want to put it on someone else, but it always comes back to me, you know. So when the chips are down and I'm looking at, you know, judging someone else, it comes back to me. You know, it's been a fantastic 28 years. I hope that I'm here for, you know, 28 years or more, you know. I've been through a lot in 28 years. You know, I talked about my mom. I was able to walk my mom through the last 9 months of her life. She passed away from terminal brain cancer. And she and I were best friends, you know, and I was able to walk through that. And she told me that I would be able to walk with my head held high, in these rooms. And I've been able to do that. I watched my father pass away in this program and my stepfather. So, you know, I've been blessed in this program, and it's because of the people in these rooms, and it's because of all the love that I've had in these rooms and the laughter, because laughter has healed me. You know, I mean, I joke a lot in these rooms, but, you know, that's what's been able to get me through. You know, a lot of it is serious because all the things I talked about, they truly happened. You know, I joke about them, but they really happened. But I can laugh about them, and through the tears and through the pain, you know, I've gotten through it all. So, you know, I want to thank you for letting me share, and thank you again and the board and everyone for letting me do this today. Thank you. Okay. I just have one announcement. I was asked to announce. Let me get my little notes out here. Tonight after the dinner, there's a wonderful evening plan, so don't sit alone in your room and come hear the music play. And here are two fellows to give you a special message. Hit it, girls.
What does that say? Oh, okay. All right. Well, my name is Louise. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Louise. Hi, I'm Allie. I'm a compulsive overeater, exercise addict.
Hello.
Well, we have a question for you. 1, 2, 3, 4. What good is sitting alone in your room? Come hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret.
Come taste the water. Come hear the band. Come blow your horn. Start celebrating. Right this way, your table's waiting. After the speaker tonight, old chum, it's time for a holiday. Life is a cabaret, old chum. It's only a cabaret, old chum.